Hi, folks. I'm excited tonight because we're going to start really getting into the meat of things now. This is the second part of the 3,000 Realms, also known as Ichinin Sanzen. Just to recap a little bit from the first video, Ichinin Sanzen, or the 3,000 Realms, is a concept that was elucidated in the 6th century in China, by Qi Yi or Qi Che, also known as Tendai, which is the name of the mountain and the monastery where he did all of his compendiums of writing and teaching, and transferred his teachings. What I tried to do in the first video, sorry about that. What I tried to do in the first video was to get you in the mindset of thinking about origins and the place or non-place where that would happen. I introduced the term Wu Ji, which is an ancient Chinese term, meaning both a point and a circle. And I explained that a point isn't anything at all except the location. And in this point is all of potential. And because potential to us in human form is all inclusive, that's why it's also known pictorially as a circle. I talked about the beginning of the universe pre-Big Bang. And I wanted to make a few notes on that because I thought a little further on that, and I thought this might illustrate things a little bit better. But before I do, I want to give you one more term. What you're going to learn in Buddhism as you study is that in order to make really emphatic points about the nature of life and the nature of things, Buddha used two mechanisms quite often. Buddhism is full of references to minutiae beyond minutiae, the tiniest beyond the tiny. And also the large, the vast, beyond fathom, beyond calculation, beyond the ability to fathom. So it's no wonder then that I call our Sangha a Sangha of quantum life Buddhism, because it's very hand in glove, if you will, conceptually, like quantum theory and quantum physics. They're two different things, I know, but you'll understand as I go on. So early Buddhism, let's talk about consciousnesses for a minute. Consciousnesses are a term used in Buddhism to describe the complexity of phenomena that arise, hang around for a while, and then fall away or disappear. Fall away. So in that description, consciousness is pretty all-inclusive. As far as we're concerned, as far as we're talking about life and the process of life, understanding everything is the goal of Buddhism. So not everything is the life process as we would think of it as sentient beings. But even insentient, things that can't perceive themselves, things that have no self-awareness, rocks, trees, as far as we know, don't have self-awareness, still are considered to be a function of certain consciousnesses, color being a consciousness. Certainly a component part of vision consciousness. before a vision can happen, before a vision can become consciousness, we first has to develop the idea of color and differentiation of color and variations. And those are all consciousnesses that, when they come together, result in vision consciousnesses. Does that make sense? All right. So, Wuji, if we can wrap our minds around a place that's not a place, that has potential for anything and everything, or nothing. This is Wuji. This is a starting point where nothing has yet happened, but the ability for everything or anything to happen begins. This is also, in Buddhism, a consciousness. But this is not a consciousness that was discussed in Hinayana Buddhism or Tripitaka Buddhism. This came about later. Until this came about, Buddhism really talked, or the limit of Buddhism, I mean, it was even smaller at the beginning, but Buddhism only knew of 8 consciousnesses. The 8th conscious, the deepest conscious, and let's go through them real quick, just so I don't cheat you out of this, okay? And this maybe give you a better idea of how Buddhists think of consciousnesses. If I can turn the page in my book here. Okay, so the first consciousness, and I have a diagram of these as concentric circles, which might help also. Okay. Now, the outermost circle, you'll see there says sight. So that's vision consciousness. The second one in is hearing consciousness, smell consciousness, taste consciousness, touch consciousness. Now we get into stuff that's more interesting as we get deeper into consciousnesses, and we reach thought. It's also called the kaya vijnana. The thought consciousness is ahead of the mind consciousness, because you really can't have a mind without already having established what thought is. See, Buddhism is incredibly logical. Beyond the mind consciousness, which is something that we experience as human beings, is the mano consciousness. Now, I describe this as the epistemology consciousness, to relate it more to modern terms. What is epistemology? Epistemology is a component of how we build our perception of differences into a system of thoughts. So do you see why it comes ahead of thought? Because it is the beginning of how we formulate ideas. Give you an idea of what I'm talking about here, to distinguish it from thought. Epistemology would be, you have no memories, let's say, of being a child of 4. Most of us don't really remember anything until we're about, maybe moments when we're 6 or 7. Then we start having more memories around the age of 9. And then after that, we start to have much more memories. The human brain doesn't really start to abstract things until you're about 9, 10 years old. So before that, memories are real sketchy. And maybe you were bit by a little yappy dog when you were 4 years old. You didn't know what a dog was. You went to touch it and it bit you. Now, you don't remember that event. I'm saying you don't remember it, so go along with me. But as an adult, every time you hear a dog growl, or even if you see a dog, you immediately genuflect and you wince, and your heart races, and you're just, your first thoughts are anxiety and fear. And you try to control those, and maybe they've become a full-blown phobia of dogs. That buried thought, that buried memory is your epistemology. Okay? So once we get past the epistemological consciousness, now this is really hard to conceive, but you can see the logic in it, is the alaya consciousness. And for many centuries, the alaya consciousness was the deepest consciousness that early Buddhism taught. It was thought that the alaya consciousness was the repository of your karmic causation, the karma that led to your existence, your spiritual makeup. In other words, the karmic cause and effect that was part of your DNA that put you in a situation where you happen to get bitten by a dog. It also affects a lot of other things, not just your dog karma. It's not that simple. But if you can follow beneath epistemology, there's a level of causation that is unique to you that brings about the situations that you experience in your life. Now that sounds like destiny, but hold on. There is a level of consciousness since Tendai, Chi Che, and before him, and I'll read it right out of here so you can have some things to look up if you like to do that kind of thing. The summary of the Mahayana, the Shelun or Shoran school, the Tendai school, and the flower garland, Kua Yin or Qigong in Japanese, school postulate a ninth consciousness called the Amala consciousness, which lies below the Alaya consciousness and remains free from all karmic impurities. Impurities, not that karma is impure, but that karma begins to funnel and filter the potential of everything into a specific thing. So the Amala consciousness is this quiescent energy I've been talking about. It's the ultimate chi. It is Wu Ji. It is the something without being. It is the precondition of everything. It is quiet, although living, moving, but very slowly, very calm, a state of almost perfect rest of energy. Energy by its own nature is not nothing, but until it has something affecting it volitionally, it has no direction. It has no forces against it, therefore it puts out no forces. And those forces are very slow to meander and connect, and the friction of different energies passing by one another would be enough to cause all kinds of reactions. Now, whether those reactions actually turn into more reactions, or whether they just arise and fall away, this is the entity of Wu Ji. The moment some activity happens, the instance that something starts to happen, we're completely arising out of, away from, differentiating from the all Wu Ji, the potential. The moment something starts to happen, even if it's the smallest particle that we're trying to measure in the accelerons in Europe and catching these fleeting moments of these tachyons, the particles so small that they go right through other particles without being noticed, they are a function of energies. And for those tiny, tiny little energies to collide or rub against or come into contact with other such energies to then produce even other more significant energies, it may take hundreds of thousands of a wonderful word from Buddhism, asankhya reactions, before something begins to really develop consciousnesses. Asankhya, I believe, is one with 106,000 zeros after it. It's a very long time. It's talked about in years, but that many years is a lot of years. So now I want to approach this. If you're following along with this Amala consciousness, I want to interject a little cosmology and science into here, because if you're anything like me, when I grew up and even into my adulthood, the universe, when anyone would talk about the universe, scientist or layperson, Buddhist, we think of the universe as this thing that was created in a moment, in an instant, and expanding like a balloon, and still expanding. But I want to give you a different idea of the universe now. And this is very, very important. We are just now in the scientific community coming to terms with the fact that when we take that explosion of the universe and we look out at all the universe, the stars, the galaxies, the matter, the gases, the interactions of the universe, the immense calculations, huge computers figuring this out, we just recently in time came to know that we only can account for about 4% of the known, what we know of the universe. 4%. It's almost nothing. If all you could account for was 4% of the cavities you've had in your life, you probably have no teeth. 4% is nothing. And then two new terms that have come out of cosmology in recent decades is dark matter and dark energy. Dark only not because it's dark, but because we can't see it or understand it or measure it, or it's just not understandable to us. We can identify it because it has to be there. We can identify that there's about 21% of matter that has to exist that we can't find. So that's dark matter. And the way planets, galaxies, all react around each other as they're moving suggests strongly that there's 75% more energy out there than we can measure or account for, except mathematically. It has to be there. We just don't know how to find it. We don't know how to identify it. So we identify it as dark energy. I want to propose something right now that I think is incredibly Buddhist to understand. Our idea of a universe exploding like a balloon with everything in it coming from this explosion is wrong. We should think of the Big Bang, or that moment of instantiation that from Wu-Ji, boom, this universe was created. We should think of it more like a drop of food coloring. Okay? Think of this drop of Wu-Ji that's going to become the entire known universe as a drop of food coloring and now drop it in a bathtub of water. It expands quickly, doesn't it? Let's say it's red food coloring. That little red drop suddenly goes boom, and it just expands really fast and it starts to slow down as it takes over the entire space of the bathtub, the water. Do you see what's happening? The universe is expanding, but it's not expanding in spite of what it's in. It's expanding into what it's in. That dark energy, that dark matter, my friends, is Wu Ji. It is Amala consciousness. It is what we're all from, made of, and will return to. Makes incredible sense if you think about it. All right? Now, I'm going to propose that although Sanskrit has been transcribed in many, many forms, many great scholars have transcribed the word karma as action. I want to add a little bit more depth to that, being as we're talking all this science here. Karma is energy with force, with intent. Now, don't misunderstand me. When you and I talk about intent, we formulate great thoughts and plans and theories, and there's a lot of causation and thought and epistemology and all of it, consciousnesses that go into your intent and my intent. I'm not talking about that level of intent. I'm saying that when two energies rub, that energies have a potential, and the potential arises from the tendencies of each of those energies and the conditions in which they create an action. The conditions in which they create that action is the intent of the action. Do you understand? Small, small, minute thing. So I was telling you, in Buddhism, there's minute things. And I want to say right here, anywhere I've researched this, in libraries, on the internet, I've researched with senior Buddhists, when you ask about the 3,000 realms in a single moment of life, or Ichin and Sanzen, 99% of the time what you get is a definition of how they come up with 3,000, with the 10 worlds, and the 10 worlds in the 10 worlds, and three entities of life, anyway, they do all this multiplication with these things, but they never tell you, and it's really hard to find anything that takes on what is the genesis of life. Where does it come from? So I understand I'm throwing a lot at you, and thank goodness these are videos, because you can go back and rewatch them and write stuff down. But I really want to take this on at the subparticle level so you get it. Because if you get the 3,000 realms in a single moment of life, you will really truly understand karma. You will really truly understand the life process. And then when somebody talks about reincarnation, you can go, man, you don't even understand. When Buddhism talks about birth and rebirth, they're talking about singular moments of the intent. Even Buddhism used different terms of birth and rebirth, and they had to use these long extended terms that people of the time understood. They didn't have quantum physics 3,000 years ago or 1,000 years ago. It was impossible for them to fathom this stuff that you and I can fathom now. So amazing that now I can use contemporary language and contemporary science and stuff that's proven, because Buddhism is a study of observation in order to deepen our perception so that we can understand ultimate truth. Ultimate truth being the truth of everything. How does stuff come into existence? How does stuff go away? Where does it go? Where does it come from? All the big questions. That's what Buddhism is about. But Buddhism doesn't rely on magic. This is carefully calculated stuff. And for Shakyamuni Buddha to have seen this and understood this 3,000 years ago, well, I think that's amazing. It's not magic, but that's amazing. That's mind-blowing, all right? So why we need to know this stuff? All karma is action, but the action comes from energy and volition. So that's an important distinguishing thing. An energy with intent becomes a consciousness, becomes noumena, or a phenomena from noumena. Noumena being a state of quiescent energy that just is waiting to become. Looking at some notes in case I've got anything to help me going through this. Well, I was pretty, when I wrote these notes, it really blows you away when you start to think about the minuteness of these interactions and how many billions and trillions of them go on all the time and just go away. They just go back into quiescence. How many of them, by chance, location, run into each other and amalgamate enough mass, energy, to actually become something that we would recognize as human, like a universe, or a sun, or a planet, or a blade of grass, or a rock, or just heat, then combining with something that contains it, then something that puts it under pressure. All of these things happening to create cells, particles, atoms, molecules that become cells, a molecule of DNA that has within it billions. What did I write down here? You know, we talk about the aggregates, but aggregates, moment to moment, continue to react in a chain. It's like a chain reaction. You understand now why the 12 Nidana is a fundamental Buddhist concept? The karmic chain, the causal chain, that has to come together in order to instantiate life, a life, a breathing, a conscious, sentient life. It's unfathomable how many things had to happen in order to just get a DNA molecule to come together. And a DNA molecule has some 46 chromosomes. That's 4,600,000 genes. How many reactions came together to make those genes, and what chance did they come together in the particular dinucleic acid that you haul around in your body that constantly, by the way, if you're looking for something, more plausible, more immediate, more knowable. Look at your bone marrow. Here's this bone marrow, this goo. You know, when we eat pork, some of us, we eat the marrow out of it. It's real flavorful, right? Well, that marrow is full of DNA and stem cells. What are stem cells? Stem cells are building blocks. They're living building blocks. They're like our, I don't want to confuse you here, but they're kind of like our Should I do it? Like our Wu-Gi of our biological Wu-Gi. That's wrong. You understand why? But the stem cells, they don't. They're not. They're ready to become anything, but they're nothing but stem cells, which is a lot, but it's a beginning. And then with our DNA and our biology and our brain, the marrow gets told by the chromosomes and the DNA and the information in there, the consciousness is in there. We need more liver, we need to replace some liver cells. So make 10,000 liver cells and send them to the liver. And we need some eye lens iris or cells. Make 2,000 of those and make 100,000 of these and send them out through the bloodstream and send them to those organs. And when the organs dilapidate and get rid of some of the old cells, send those to the appropriate organs and poop them out, get rid of them. We don't need them anymore. Your body is doing this constantly. Your body is constantly making something with an identity and a purpose specific to the needs of your body from material that is just, it's putty. It's just, it doesn't know what it is yet until the DNA tells it what to be. And the marrow says, okay, we can do that, and sends it on its way. So it's a cruder example of what I'm describing as a as something larger than the universe, as this dark energy, dark matter, as this quiescent energy, the Amala consciousness, from which everything is born. When we chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, we make a sound, a vibration in our bodies that connects us to that Amala consciousness. So that when we do that, we just casually go through all the other consciousnesses. And we strike our vision because we're staring at a mandala, and we hear it. We have smells, incense in the room. We have light from the candles, sound from the bell from our chanting. We have all these consciousness. We dive right through our thoughts, our epistemology, our karma. And we bust right through there and go straight to the meat, straight through Uji, straight to the Amala consciousness. When we do that, we're breaking through karmic impediments. We're cleansing our senses. We're cleansing our consciousnesses. Every chant, every time Myoho Renge Kyo comes out, boom, it's like a little windshield wiper going through everything and striking at the karma and aligning it in a positive life-affirming way. Instead of where some tendencies in epistemology and other things may have misled it to create fears and anger and anxieties and things that aren't life-affirming. So this is why the more we chant, the more we enliven our Buddha nature, our Amala consciousness. That's Buddhahood. The quiescent energy is Buddhahood. It has everything, all answers. It is everything. And when we reach it through our chanting, we enliven it through all our senses, and we move our lives toward a life-affirming way, which is happiness. If all we did was life-affirming causation, wouldn't we be happy? Wouldn't we feel joy? This is Buddhism. This is the core. I'm telling you, if you get this, nothing else in Buddhism will be a mystery to you. And that's 35 minutes almost. So I think I pretty much nailed this today for the causal chain and for Ichin and Sanzen. I'm going to try to put something together nail this down further in the third of the series, we'll start expanding into the other areas of why the Four Noble Truths, why the Ten Worlds, how that works, aggregates. All of it comes from this. Everything in Buddhism comes from this. I thank you so much for listening. It's wonderful for me to be able to try to articulate this stuff because it's difficult. And I'm totally relying on your comments in the comments sections to help me figure out how to make this clearer, if possible, point out any glaring holes that I've created for myself so that I can fix them and we'll all get there together, all right? I forgot to do Sancho at the beginning of this, but I am going to close with it. So here we go. Namu Myo Renge Kyo Namu Myo Renge Kyo Namu Myo Renge Kyo. Thank you so much. I love you all. I respect you. Please correct me if I've made mistakes and let me know how I can do better. Thanks for watching. See you next time.